Hello, gamers of refined taste, and welcome to episode 68 of the Nerdstravaganza podcast, where old games go to die or live on in the deep recesses of our sometimes troubled, sometimes inspired minds. I'm Tom.
I'm Rick.
I'm Brian.
And real Rick is away doing his part to contribute to the body of human artistic work by recording with his band. But stand-in Rick, voiced by Brian, may put in with his opinions from time to time during tonight's conversation.
Don't count on that.
But before we get into our topic, which is video games of a certain sort from our past, let's kick things off with our usual Geekly Weekly roundup. Brian, go first. What have you been up to, sir?
I left the book that I was working on at work one day in desperation to have something to read while I was not at work. I picked up, what's his name, Sanderson, first book of his trilogy, Mistborn.
Hmm.
Very interesting. He gets talked about a lot, and I can see why. Not quite the glowing praise I had for Rothfuss, whatever that guy's name was. But really good book. I'm enjoying this, and it's kind of refreshing to know that a book doesn't have to be flawless to be good.
So it has flaws, but you're enjoying it nevertheless.
Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't even call them flaws. I'd call it like. Maybe it's just not greatness that I'm enjoying. It's a good book, not like it's not knocking my socks off. Seriously, I was ready to elope with Patrick Rothfuss. That's a killer book.
That was the author of
Name of the Wind.
Name of the Wind. Okay, yeah, that's still on my to read list.
Really good. Seriously, everyone compares him to Tolkien. I can totally see why.
Oh wow,
Sanderson's. I sound like I'm down on Sanderson, and I don't mean to be whatsoever. I'm enjoying Sanderson. I'm really tearing through this book, and I'm reading it on a Android. That should tell you something. The fact that I'm lowering myself to e-readers.
Yes, yes.
I must be enjoying it.
Oh, cool. So it's accessible. Let's just say.
Yeah, yeah. I guess so. And in preparation for the endless stream of Kickstarters that I should maybe possibly start getting sometime soon. I'm examining my existing armies and getting ready to paint. So to do that, I broke out my recent Reaper Bones and started going through picking out my favorites and getting ready to paint because I've never painted that plastic before. Slightly different, not a huge thing, but you know I want to be prepared.
Well, I hope you gained some insights into how to paint on those figures because mine is waiting for me at home when I return to Florida and I can't paint on anything. So
there are some really cool figures in that set, dude.
Cool. Looking forward
some
to
really
digging
good
into
stuff.
It. Cool. Anything else?
No, that's about it.
Okay. I guess that brings it over to me. And I will start by saying I've continued my reading of George Effinger's A Fire in the Sun, which is a sequel to When Gravity Fails, the first novel of his that I read. Interesting, very enjoyable. The sort of Islamic cyberpunk future continues to serve as a compelling backdrop for this piece of, what was it, noir fiction that you named it, I think, last time, Brian?
Yeah, they call it cyber noir, didn't they? Or
something along like those that. Lines. Yeah. It's, you know, things are leading to more mystery and this, you know, hardscrabble, unwilling detective is going to get to the bottom of it. So that's proving interesting. In addition, I am playing some more Battlefield 3, getting to the point where my kill-to-death ratio is about 1-to-1, which is a huge improvement for me. I'm a middling player, and I'm hitting my middling stride, I guess you could say. Also started, I should say installed, bought and installed Final Fantasy 14, and have been able to create a character, not on a server of my choosing, and log in once, only to log out, change my graphical settings, and then not be able to log in because the server population was at maximum. So the MMORPG blues of the early days. Anybody who's ever been in on a brand new MMO.
The early days, he says.
Well,
we've been forever.
Yes, having issues with that. But it looks cool, and I'm looking forward to playing it some more. I will report on that once I've actually had time in the game. And I went on a little field trip to a town north of Seattle called, I think, Everett. I visited, finally, a gaming-themed restaurant called the AFK Tavern, which was really cool. And I can say that everybody in the place appeared to be legit nerds. There were people right at these booths. I mean, it's a proper restaurant. You had people sitting at these booths just gaming while they were eating. The conversations you know, I was vetting them as I walked around the place, and they all centered on topics that we would deem appropriate. The place delivered on what it was, which was a sort of like a tavern for geeks, and they had a full bar. I got a couple of nice exotic fruity drinks to go with my tasty meal and enjoyed myself. So if you're in the greater Seattle area, I highly recommend AFK Tavern. And yeah, that's it. Basically, my 3DS is still occupying some of my time, and that concludes my update, which brings us to tonight's topic, which is actually concerning gaming. So good that I sort of ended on a 3DS note, but we'll be going back in time a little bit. Brian, you and I being gamers of a certain vintage, we have had the good fortune of experiencing a number of games throughout the years of various, let's say, quality that left impressions on us for a number of reasons. And we're going to just kind of, for fun, go down a list of some of those and discuss them tonight. And I guess what we'll start, what, back in the 16-bit era?
Let's get the 8-bit one out of the way.
Okay, hit it, yeah.
I never realized that people might not like this game. And I saw it recently on Angry Video Game Nerd. He hated Highlight. I love that game. I'm distraught by that. Highlight was one of the reasons I became so enamored with killing dragons and fighting slimes and rescuing fairy princesses.
What were his main complaints about the game?
Oh, he hated every little thing about it. The spells were awkward to use and cast. They didn't do anything. The functionality was pretty limited. I mean, it was a NES game, and it was really early for, I guess, Zelda clones. It was really early for Zelda clones. So you had to basically run up and hit monsters, like, with your character. You didn't, like, really swing a sword or shoot a bow or anything.
Oh, like Ease, kind of.
Yeah, kind of, which I'm sure most people would have disliked, too.
Yes.
One of the things he touched on was just so, one of the things I liked it so much. There was this one dungeon that a vampire lived in, and, of course, he had vampire bats and other evil creatures living in the dungeon, but it was completely dark. And you were supposed to get a lantern before you could go in there, and the lantern basically allowed you to not slowly die. So if you went into the dungeon, you could walk around and you could actually fight the vampire bats if you could find them. But no matter what you did, you'd slowly lose hit points. And I just had this picture in my mind of stumbling through the darkness and hitting your head on low doors and, you know, walking into things and stumbling and falling and good reasons to lose, like, a hit point here or there at a time. And he just despised that. He was like, it's stupid. I'm just standing still. Why am I dying?
I think there's a lot of the gaps that your imagination probably filled in with those older games. I found myself doing that a lot when I was a kid, rationalizing away certain mechanics in games that were put there just to present a challenge. I think in today's era, where the game experience is so rich that there aren't huge gaps like that, a game like Highlight, where these sort of seemingly on their surface nonsensical challenges present themselves, seems just, I could see why somebody named the Angry Video Game Nerd would get angry at it, put it that way.
One more favorite thing about Highlight, speaking of 16-bit, one of the best sequels to any game I've ever played, man. Super Highlight, I believe it was called, for the Genesis, if you can believe that a super game was ever made for the Genesis. It was amazing. It was everything that I wanted at the time in a role-playing game like that. You actually had to change your money because, you know, copper coins weighed more than gold coins. So you would become encumbered if you carried too much money. You actually had to, like, go back to town in the middle of the night and rest, or you'd start fighting more and more poorly. It was amazing.
I wonder what the Angry Video Game Nerd would make of that game with its challenging encumbrance and fatigue systems.
Maybe you should look that up. I don't know if he did that one.
I think I've seen him do mainly 8-bit stuff, but it may be there that he has a lot of 16-bit stuff in his catalog, too. So worth looking into. And if I'm not mistaken, didn't they do another Highlight game for one of the 32-bit systems?
No, you're mistaken.
I am? I thought for sure they did one for the Saturn.
No, they didn't.
Oh. Yes, they didn't. Let's just leave it at that. No such thing ever occurred. I didn't mention it.
Matrix is one fucking movie, and Highlight is two games.
That's fine. So want to advance to the 16-bit era where there's no shortage of excellent games to discuss?
Absolutely.
I'll bring a game up that was a source of some contention between my neighbor across the street and I, because he owned the game, and I would go over. He had a Genesis before I had a Genesis. So I had only a Super NES. I had only an NES at the time. And so I would go over to play the latest in 16-bit games. So one of these 16-bit games he got was called Stormlord. And he liked it because he liked, you played this little like Viking character, and there were all of these like naked fairy statues with their boobs hanging out, if I remember right. And of course, being kids of like 13 and 14 years, that was pretty cool. But there's one thing in that game that irritated me. Like after the first two or three times, like, oh, that was funny. Okay, that's funny. All right. Yes. Okay, that was one of two things. First, he would whistle every time he walked by one of the stupid fairy statues. Like, all right, we get it. The naked fairy statues are everywhere. And the second thing is his attack was just that blue balls would shoot out of his chest. And he didn't move his arm. They weren't axes. His attack was like there was a clicking sound and blue, like, marbles or whatever just shot out of his chest. And that's how you attacked your enemies. That struck me as so stupid and offensive in a way that really something like that can only be offensive to a teenage kid, I think, that I to this day, it irritates me to think of that game between the whistling and those blue balls.
Until this very moment, I never got the sexual connotations of his blue balls, actually.
Yeah, neither did I. It occurs to me now that there probably was a subtle genius in the game that I wouldn't get until decades later. So till right now, actually, because it just dawned on me as well. The blue balls, I get it. So Stormlord, available for the Sega Genesis. I believe that was it might have been one of those crazy EA cartridges with like the yellow tab on the side too.
I think it was.
Yeah. Don't quote me on that, but I'm not recommending it. I'm just saying it's there if any of that interests you. Very ambivalent on that one. So you got another one, Brian?
In the vein of Stormlord, a game that I thought did things much better, but I remember feeling very silly about some things, was Sword of Sodan.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Giant. They were called sprites once upon a time, weren't they?
Yes, they were, yes.
Giant sprites and amazing graphics for 16-bit, but just enemies that would politely kneel before you while you hacked mercilessly at their necks.
Yes. Well, to be fair, you had to subdue them. Like, you had to hit them with some body blows or something to get them to go down on the knee, and then you would hack their head off. You would just savagely chop their head off, right?
Yeah.
That game, as I remember, the fighting involved button spamming because you wanted to get your foes on the ground, and then you had the dual challenge of keeping other foes off of you while you were busy hacking the heads off the ones that were subdued. And there was much gore and bloodshed.
I think that was an early Saw game.
I think it was. And I remember a lot of screaming in the game, too, like, oh, oh, as you were, like, butchering these enemies.
Makes sense.
Not sure who Sodan was. Was he the main character? Or maybe his name should have been Sawdan, now that you mention it, Brian.
For some reason, I think he was actually the evil wizard you were trying to kill.
Did you finish that game, Brian?
I think I did actually kill, possibly, Sodan.
Did you hack his head off?
No, because he wasn't one of the giant enemies. It was only the giants that you could hack off like that.
Oh, that's right. Sword of Sodan. Wow, takes me back. A game that I could recall that I think was trying to compete maybe with Sword of Sodan, but was also trying to trade on its name, was Rostan Saga. And anybody who was an arcade kid in probably the late 80s would have seen the name Rostan and thought, oh man, that awesome barbarian game from the arcade. Now I get to play its even better sequel at home on the Sega Genesis. And that kid would be wrong, because I remember Rostan Saga being a very mediocre looking and playing sort of a barbarian side-scrolling fighter. Memorable to me only because of the classic line delivered during one of the interludes between stages that read, "If I turn back now, my friends will laugh at me." And so Rostan soldiered on to the next stage because he was afraid to turn back and have his buddies laugh at him.
I also remember the incredibly silly lifeline in that game with the graphic beating human heart. In the lower screen.
Yes! I forgot about that. Refresh my memory. Would the heart beat more rapidly as your lifeline depleted?
The veins and arteries diminished around it, and it would beat faster and more loudly, I believe.
That's right. Oh, gosh. They were hacking away at the heart of Rostan Saga or something like that. Let's get out of here. Let's get away from the Genesis for a second. This is getting bad. Ooh, Brian, I know there's a great game that we both, I won't call it a guilty pleasure for both of us, but I know we both played and we were we criticized pretty roundly, but at the same time, both played to completion a couple of times. Why don't you let the audience know what that one was?
It was called Draken.
Yes.
For the Super Nintendo. I cannot think of one positive thing to say about it.
And yet you admit that we both played it at least twice to completion.
This is basically the MST3K of SNES to me. This game was so fun to ridicule.
It really was. I enjoyed playing it just for the laughs. Where to start? They commendably try to implement a sort of pseudo 3D play field on a system that obviously couldn't do 3D, right? So that you are running through this, like, I believe Mode 7 enhanced play field. So there was sort of a 3D effect, but it was basically just drawing in the map as you ran along, right?
It was drawing it in, and they accomplished this by actually drawing a line in the distance and making you walk towards that line, so the line got bigger and bigger as you got near it.
That's right.
You were walking on a hex map, like a real-world hex map.
I forgot about that. And so as you were stumbling your way around this somewhat bizarre 3D world, you, of course, would encounter its denizens, both hostile and friendly. It's kind of a toss-up as to which you wanted to encounter, because while having a star constellation suddenly turn into a giant wyvern and come kill you was most inconvenient.
Attack you. Kill you outright.
Yeah, you were just dead. While that was pretty disheartening if you hadn't saved recently, what was worse is being accosted by one of the more chatty... Yes, Brian has just faithfully recreated the sound of what I think was the roadside bard who would like impart valuable information that you didn't really need in like a 17 paragraph
with
monologue.
No, walk away from him, no way to skip through it.
Yes, and he would do that annoying sound, which and on he would go. And do you remember him ever telling you anything you needed?
No. Not anything that helped in the least. All I remember is pressing more buttons to listen to the bard than to actually fight a dragon.
Yes. Oh, how annoying that guy was. I hated it when he showed up. Let's see. In addition to him, there was the... Now, I want to say, when I say showed up, either you have the case of the constellation creature just appearing out of some stars that were in the sky. The bard, I think, would just like, boom, like poof in front of you.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, he would just appear. And then the dragons, when they wanted to show up either to attack you or to impart their dragonly wisdom, would just fall out of the sky, right?
Fall out of the sky and just land on their feet in the middle of the desert.
Yes. Well, in the desert where you may have just gotten through fighting, I don't know, a water elemental. Remember that?
Yeah.
And these dragons, so I guess there were hostile dragons, or did you fight dragons, or were they just like givers of wisdom like the bards?
I remember fighting dragons or drakens or whatever, but I have no idea why. I think they were just grumpy.
Well, for all their ancient reptilian wisdom, the one thing the dragons never could seem to get right was direction, like the cardinal directions. Because a dragon would land on the right side of the screen, pointing to the left, and say, you know, you must go west in that direction. Or on the left side of the screen, pointing to the right, saying you must go west in that direction. It didn't really matter what direction you were facing. West was just to where, in their mind, west was just over there somewhere.
The opposite side that they spawned on.
Yes. And I don't remember them ever having any, like, reason to give you directions.
It was always some, like, bullshit. Like, oh, the town to the west is having a sale on weapons.
Yeah.
No, like, it's not. There's no town. I can't even buy weapons in this game. What are you talking about?
Noble dragons were basically reduced to, like, you know, barkers on the side of the road. To say nothing of one of the awesome constructs in the game, which was a huge device, basically a level cap right in the middle of the map, a giant field of warding, which would not let you pass until you had accomplished some goal. If you would try to walk through this field, it would repel you. But there was a way through it, Brian. Why don't you let the audience know what that was?
Well, it was programmed very simply so that when you walked into it, it would push you backwards. Even if you walked into it backwards, it would push you backwards through it and onto the other side.
Yes, so you would simply back through this thing, which you were not supposed to be able to traverse it. I don't really know what the key was to actually getting through the barrier to this day. I would always just back my way through it.
I think you were supposed to win the dragon's trust or something, which I can never tell which dragon I was supposed to kill and which one was supposed to trust me. So just easier to cheat.
And truth be told, I'm still not sure exactly what I did in that game. I know I got my characters all tricked out in maximum dragon armor.
The same dragon armor for your archer, your wizard, and your fighters.
Yes. Which you would think would impart like a certain measure of invulnerability, but an unlucky encounter with a water elemental near a lake could leave you in your like small clothes and like on the verge of death, no matter how well equipped you were, if I recall.
I seem to recall environmental damage destroying your armor too, like standing in a puddle.
Yes, and the real pisser was, pun intended, you could toggle between your different characters and control one character at a time, but the quote-unquote AI would take over for the others, and they would seriously like run over to the nearest lake in an attempt to drown themselves, if I remember right. And the whole time their armor's like exploding off of them, and you see their pieces of armor falling off of them in the character, you know, the character window at the bottom of the screen. Ugh. That game was awful. Why did we like that game so much?
I have no idea.
To say nothing, by the way, all right, this is the last thing I'll bet you, Drakan. When you would make it into the grim, like, dungeons, you'd walk into these rooms with your party, and there'd be, like, narration text on the bottom of the screen describing what you saw in the room. So you'd walk into these rooms, and I don't know if it was censorship or what, but there'd be, like, these descriptions of these grisly scenes, like the bodies of the fallen or lay everywhere, a pool of blood up to your ankles, you know, slows your progress. And the room was just, like, bare. There was nothing to be seen. Our theory then, and I think now, is that was censorship, right, Brian?
I believe it had to have been. I think they just couldn't show anything, so they showed nothing.
And one thing I wish they had never showed was the bizarre chest-thumping mental midget of an enemy that would come, some kind of a reptilian creature that would appear. Its sound effect was, meh, 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 when it would attack you. Which only made it more gratifying when it died, when you finally, like, oh god, I can't wait to get rid of this annoying creature. When you killed it, it died like everything else. It fucking exploded.
Starburst.
You couldn't wait to kill that enemy. Oh boy, Draken. I don't actually know what the plot of Draken was. I wish I could tell you to play it. I think you should. I think it's enough of a curiosity that you should, though. I will give that a recommendation if you are at all... If you want a... What would you say, Brian? Unique experience?
I consider it part of your learning experience. You can't really appreciate the good stuff unless you suffer through shit like this.
Yes, yes.
It's like learning about like UNIVAC and shit.
Right, you've got to know what it was like back in the day so you can appreciate what you have now. Let's round out the 16-bit era with one of the great co-op games that we played on the Genesis, to step back over to the Genesis for a moment, Brian.
An interesting definition of co-op it is.
If I remember, one person was the driver and one was the shooter in the game called...
Bimini Run.
Made famous by the catchphrase...
Kenji, come in!
Apparently you played as Kenji, who is on the Bimini Run in his speedboat, which also had a machine gun. And why did that guy call us all the time, telling us to come in?
The only thing I remember about the game is... that you had like watchtowers to destroy before you could fight the boss. So he must have been radioing us the locations of the watchtowers.
That's right. Now, the game was hectic, and one player was quite difficult, but with two players, one man could drive, and as I mentioned, and the other would man the machine gun. And we got pretty good. In fact, we got right near the end of that game before we died, right?
I think we finally beat it.
Did we finally finish it?
Didn't we just like save a mermaid or something?
Something along those lines. I think we did finally beat that game. I know it was a hell of a challenge.
That was a summer we should have spent studying for SATs.
Oh, that's right. Between that and Aero Blasters, I think we kind of screwed ourselves on our SAT scores.
Well, it worked out. You know, we had the successful podcast.
Yeah, well, that's true. Things have worked out. We are now captains of media. Speaking of Aero Blasters, another game we wasted a lot of time with, that was a game on the TurboGrafx-16 game. And now this will truly round out the 16-bit era. There was a game for the TurboGrafx-16 CD-ROM add-on. Yes, we were such nerds that not only did we have the TurboGrafx-16, but we also had the CD-ROM add-on years before anybody got their PlayStations, I'll point out.
I almost shit myself the first time that game spoke.
Oh, God, I'll never forget that. That was Valis 3 for the TurboGrafx-16.
Long ago.
Yes, the words were long ago, and it proceeded to tell the story while showing this quote-unquote cartoon. Kind of mind-blowing at the time. Mind-blowing in a different way, though, was Exile 2, a sequel to actually a pretty fun game put out by Working Designs called Exile. Exile 2 sought to give players a little bit more of a challenge by ramping up the difficulty a little bit. So they asked, if I understand it correctly, Working Designs coordinated with the original Japanese developer of the game and had them go in and up the hit points of a lot of the monsters. Something was lost in translation, such as these monsters became nearly invulnerable to attack.
I have heard, and I don't know if this is true or if it's just incredibly believable, I have heard it was a misplaced decimal.
I could believe that, because these creatures were, like, insanely... Like, you'd go from one stage to the next, and the creatures became godlike, and you had to just grind away on mundane enemies in order to be able to proceed, so you could level up.
So things were normal for the first quote-unquote stage, at the end of which you actually fought the bad guy's deity, Crawly.
Yes.
So immediately after having vanquished a deity, on your way home from that encounter, a sheep would fucking wreck your day.
Yes, in the second stage, these enemies, which were supposed to be just, you know, mundane like encounters for experience, had now been ramped up per this new, I don't know if you want to call it algorithm or whatever, to the point where Brian actually narrated for one of them. Go ahead.
Infidel.
Yes. We add, again, filling in the blanks with our own sort of metagaming narrative. The goat was a servant of Crawly and was out for revenge. Infidel.
We hacked on that thing for like 15 minutes before it died, didn't we?
I think so. And like that was the first of several goats on that stage, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
My God.
Just ran like hell from the second one.
I think so. You know, we're to be commended, though. We made it to the end of that game. We could not beat the bad guy because you had to use the main character. You couldn't use the guy that had, like, the long-ranged weapon.
After 2 hours of fighting him with Lawrence and actually depleting his entire health...
He just wouldn't die.
Zero health. It just did nothing. It was cosmetic. His health bar was cosmetic.
Yes, we fought the last boss with the one of the other... Yeah, you had to fight him with the main character. We didn't do it. And, yeah, it literally took us 2 hours to not deplete his health bar. Down to nothing, and he would not die. That was awful. Exile 2, TurboGrafx-16. Geez, steer clear of that one. Just take our word for it. Let's step forward into the 32-bit era. I think we've got a console game, maybe, and a very awesome, maybe, PC game to discuss. I'm going to let you take the console game, Brian, because you're the one that introduced me to it initially.
I was a late adapter to the PlayStation. I loved 16-bit era. I just didn't need anything else. All of my friends were talking about how amazing the games were for PlayStation. Legacy of Kain. I think it's called Blood Omen, The Legacy of Kain.
Yes, yes.
Was the game that finally, like, okay, I've got to go out. I've got to do this. I couldn't even afford the game. I bought the system, borrowed the game from a friend. I played it. It was you're becoming a vampire. You have to manage the blood to keep your health up, and you can choose what power ups you spend experience on. I was like, oh, I'm in love with this game. This is great. And the first thing I bought was the I don't even remember what it was called, but the special sword attack. Every enemy you fought from that point on, your character would shout, "Vae Victus! Vae Victus! Vae Victus! Vae Victus!" Every time you performed the combo, and it drove me stark raving mad.
I remember hearing so much about this game and finally going to your house, and like you spammed that shit just to get the point across. Vae Victus! Vae Victus! Okay, all right.
Wasn't to get the point across. I was actually trying to play, though.
Yeah, there was no way around using that dumb attack, I guess. Blood Omen, Legacy of Kain, which spawned, a couple of sequels, so it was very successful, I guess.
I hear it was very good, and I hear the sequels were actually really amazing. I will never fucking know.
Another game just came to mind that I'll never know anymore about because I quit early on due to the treatment it received at the hands of Working Designs. Working Designs was a company with which I had a love-hate relationship. I loved that they localized so many games from Japan. I hated that they put in their own brand of quote-unquote humor, which I felt just ruined the games. I'm talking, of course, about, for the PlayStation, Alundra. Do you remember that, Brian?
That was the Landstalker clone, correct?
Yeah, I don't think it had the isometric view, but basically it looked like the guy from Landstalker, which was an awesome game, by the way.
With the and Valley Girl Succubus.
The Valley Girl Succubus made me stop playing the game. because it was, you know, this was the, now we were in the full CD-ROM era, so things were voiced. And as soon as I heard that, I was just like, nah, I'm done. But isn't that where you stopped too?
Yep.
So anybody who's beaten that game, let me know. It looked cool. I really wanted to play through it, but no, wasn't going to happen. I think that concludes any other 32-bit games to discuss before we move on to our big PC, what's the word, PC crescendo, I guess, for the episode.
I'm sure there's 1,000, but I can't think of any right now.
Okay, then let's move on to a sort of epoch-defining, or epic, however you pronounce that, defining.
An epic-defining?
An epic-defining for us, massively multiplayer online role-playing game. The only one that I ever played, you'd had some MUD experience at the time. You skipped Ultima Online. Rumors were that it was very unforgiving and player-killery. And so you jumped in, and I jumped in right after you, along with a bunch of our friends, to EverQuest, the awesome sort of progenitor of the modern MMORPG, I would say. And wow, such a complicated bag of emotions to unpack around that game. I don't even know where to start.
An interesting story of human evolution, too.
Oh?
With my monitor?
Oh, God, yes. Oh, my gosh. All right. Here's my intro to EverQuest. Brian decides it's time to do a hardware refresh in his life. So he went out, bought a brand new PC to play EverQuest, bought a brand new, at the time, the Sony Vega television, which was like the top-of-the-line TV you could get. You still have that TV, and it still looks good to this day, I'll point out.
Yep.
Hooked EverQuest up to that and started playing. So I get over, and you and another one of our friends are there playing it. Your TV is just like sitting in the middle of the room. You haven't even been able to like move it because you guys got totally engrossed in this game.
Immediately addicted.
Yeah, so like the TV, like imagine a freshly unpacked television and
I don't even think I'd sealed the PC, had I? Wasn't it still open? I had just installed the card and left it there.
Yeah, I think the PC was not, yeah, the case wasn't even on. You had popped a 3D card in, installed EverQuest. Like basically it was like walking into an incomplete showroom in an electronics store or something. And you were sitting there playing this game and I was immediately drawn in. That's how immediately addictive EverQuest was. Like, nothing else mattered as soon as you started playing it. You couldn't believe it. Like, you were in this world. And I was just, for a while, speechless. I didn't even know what questions to ask. So eventually, we all got sucked into it. Wow, what an addictive experience. And the evolution piece that Brian cites is he was playing on this top-of-the-line television, but it was over. Was it just RCA cables, or did it have VGA input or something?
No, it was Super Video.
Okay, yeah, that's right. That's right, over at S-Video coming out of that card he had. So it's testament to the quality of the TV that the text was legible at all. But for the rest of us in the group who were used to playing on PC monitors, the text was illegible. Brian's eyes actually evolved to be able to read. Like, we just saw a blur on the screen, and we'd be like, Brian, what does that say? He'd glance at it and could read it like it was nothing.
I'm paying for it now.
Yeah, your eyes have your eyes are shot for that. So the technical setup issues aside and Brian's eye evolution aside, I will say that EverQuest provided a hell of a lot of interesting memories. As I said, I think I missed the waning days of the 32-bit era and pretty much most of the PlayStation 2's life cycle because of EverQuest. I've played a lot of MMORPGs since then, and none of them have quite grabbed me like that one did because I think it was my first one. It felt like you were in the world. And I remember one story in particular where we were on the plains of Karana, this big open like plain at night. It was like thundering. There's like giants stomping around outside. And like fools, we thought we would take refuge in this farmer's hut.
But it wasn't just us, man. Like the entire like people from all over ran to that hut in the night to cower. It was such a weird shared experience.
Yeah.
It's really a farmhouse. Was. Of course it's safe.
Right. It was something that was lit and there were like friendly human NPCs in there and, well, okay,
walls.
And walls. So you'd go in this farmhouse and cower. Well, during the testing of EverQuest, they basically decided that they should turn off the physics on walls because people were using them to exploit. Meaning you would like attract a monster and then you would run inside a house while your spells killed it. You know, so they basically eliminated physics. Well, we didn't know that. And hence the story, hence the legend of Santa Lion came into being. I'm sitting there with my back to this fireplace, and we're all sitting around. Like at the time, you had to sit and meditate, and or just sit idly to recover your hit points, which took forever.
But you actually had to stare at the book. Like, it wouldn't let you just sit there. The book took over your screen, so you couldn't see what was going on because your character was so intensely studying his book.
So there I am, back to this fireplace, and I don't know if you'd gotten done reading a book or if you were playing a monk at the time, didn't need to. We'd gotten mauled by some kind of creature out on the plains of Karana and barely escaped with our lives. And we're cowering in this farmhouse when all of a sudden I see my character like lets out a yelp of pain, and I get a big hit point damage counter. A lion matriarch attacks you for 27 points of damage. I'm like, what the hell? Brian starts typing. At the time, we weren't voice chatting. He starts typing like, LOL. I'm like, dude, what are you laughing at? Help me. I find out after the fact that basically this lion's head popped through the fireplace, and then it started clawing me, hence Santa Lion, because this thing slid down the chimney.
Its head and one claw visible. Whack, 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 whack.
Of course, it really just walked right through like the non-existent wall, but the effect was that it came down the chimney to kill me. I think we did kill Santa Lion, but that resulted in several more minutes of healing before we could move on. Any other memorable experiences from EverQuest, Brian?
I shouldn't brag about this. I'm a fan of skirting the rules, and there was a dungeon. I don't even remember the name of the dungeon. Was it Befallen? But you needed to camp keys to progress. And first off, everything in that game was camped to hell. So you had to go to the dungeon, get a camp for an hour or two for everyone in the group to get their key, and then you could actually open the first door and go in and camp for an hour or two for everyone to get their second key. And it drove me kind of nuts. Or what you could do is pick an enemy, beat it to within an inch of its life so that it would actually flee from you. And the enemies were capable of opening the doors.
So they would let you in?
So my imagination filling in the holes, I picked a rat, a giant rat, beat him up, and he started to flee from me. And I stopped attacking him and just let him flee. And he walked down the hallway, walked up to the door, and with his little tail, went over and picked the lock and the door opened. And in he went, and I followed right after him.
What an oversight that they would let these enemies open the doors for you.
I guess it would have been cheap if that rat had just stood there walking into an unopenable door, and I would have beat him up more easily, so.
That's true.
God forbid anything be easy in the least in that game, aside from opening doors.
Oh, that game was unforgiving. And that was a later dungeon, too. That wasn't one of like the initial launch dungeons, was it?
I think it was in at launch, but it certainly wasn't doable at launch. That was like a little 20 zone.
Want to know what else wasn't doable at launch? Transportation by ship. Our first time taking ship to go to a far-off land. Now, mind you, we're still in this world where we're just completely wide-eyed and amazed by all of its majesty and grandeur and the sheer scale of it. We're going to hop on a ship and go over to this continent of Otis, where the erudites live. Unfortunately, on the way over to Otis, we discovered to our dismay that ship physics were sort of a questionable at the time.
If they can't get wall physics right, they can't do water physics.
It was pretty bad. I had to actually, I got the game. I've never gotten seasick in real life, and I've been on some boats in some pretty choppy seas or whatever, but I almost got seasick my first time on a boat in EverQuest, because everybody, including me, was warping all over the deck. And one minute I'd be below deck, then I'd be on deck, then I'd be up on the mast, then my friends would all be drifting around. Then when the boat would zone, it was anyone's guess as to whether you would zone with it. So I found myself like in the middle of the ocean, swimming, like, and slowly dying in the ocean. Thankfully, I was put out of my misery by a giant who, as near as I could tell, was walking along the bottom of the ocean and decided to punch me to death. So yeah, ship travel in early EverQuest, quite perilous.
I know I exaggerate sometimes. I really do remember seeing Letha in two places at once because of the blinking.
On the ship, right?
She was actually just here and there and there.
Yeah, it was like quantum, quantum physics or whatever, where things could be in two places at once. Is it part of the engine? I can't wait to see EQ next, if they were able to do that in the original EverQuest.
Blink is the only spell that character could cast.
Blink. One more fond memory, and this had nothing to do with the game, but it did have something to do with our playing of the game. So this was our flaw as players, not anything to do with the game. We were in a kobold, what would you call it, a warren or something, called Blackborough.
Knowles.
Sorry, Knowles, yes, the dog man, Knowles. Does warren work for dogs or no? Do they live in warrens?
It was a burrow, I guess. I mean,
well, it was Blackborough, right? I should just, instead of trying to be fancy with my language, I should just say that it's Blackborough, home of the Knowles that live near the town of Kanos. So there we are. We managed to get our party fairly well situated deep within the dungeon, but in a dangerous, there's danger between the entrance and where we are, but we've gotten ourselves in kind of a sweet spot where we can kill these wandering Knowles with relative impunity without their big brothers coming to thump on us. Well, we got a little bit greedy, and instead of waiting for our normal prey to come by, I decided that with my bow, I could probably hit a Knoll we saw up on a faraway ledge and get him to run down and fight us, then we could kick the crap out of him too. So I looked around. Everything looked pretty safe. There, we were sort of camped out in this one spot at the bottom of this ramp. Over against a far wall, there was a party of like six barbarians who we figured could get our back if anything went amiss. Whatever. I think Brian might have got up to try to pull it with a spell. That or one of our other friends did, and they didn't have line of sight on it for the spell or something, or it was out of range. So I decided, well, let me see if I can hit it with my bow. Sure enough, I draw my bow. Ba-ding! You know, the arrow flies off, and the Knoll, like, argh! You see him recoil, and then he comes running down. Okay, guys, get ready. He should be down any second. So down he comes around this winding ramp. And all right, here we go. We're going to kick this guy's butt. Well, little did we know that before he ran down, he decided to recruit the rest of Blackborough to come with him.
It was like Braveheart.
It really was. All we saw was this ocean of like blue-gray dog faces just charging towards us as every Knoll and his brother in Blackborough came rushing down the ramp. We didn't even try. We just started laughing.
I'm not defeatist at all, but I just stood up and waited.
And again, I wish there had been like a Ventrilo or something, or we had had something like that to hear the real-time reactions. But we actually were typing like, oh my god, LOL, ha ha ha, as we were just doomed. And we got completely steamrolled and proceeded to wipe the entire zone.
Sorry, guys.
Still sorry about that to this day. If you were playing on the Kazik Tool server in like
Rivercaster, humblest apologies.
What was that, one of the barbarians we killed?
Yes.
Kazik Tool, Rivercaster, 1999. We are so sorry. We got back and there were a lot of high level characters just trying to clear the zone entrance of the massive train that made it there. There must have been 100 Knolls piled up at the entrance, just waiting for people to come in. By the time we made it down to our, well, it was easy to find our way back to our corpses.
That's how we followed the head-to-toe player corpses.
Yes, it was a trail of dead people. And that party, that poor party of which Rivercaster was a member, just were dead right where they sat. Like, they didn't even have time to get up. Oh, God, that was such a massacre brought about by us. But the awesomeness of it bears a retelling of the tale from time to time. EverQuest. So let's see, we've taken things from the 16-bit all the way up to the classic PC. I think we've more or less gone down memory lane pretty well regarding classic games. Anything else you want to talk about, or I think we've taken people far enough down memory lane?
I think that's good. We need to do the current gen in a later episode.
Agreed. And then after that, we'll do a next gen with all of our exploits on the next gen consoles and EverQuest Next, which I am actually looking forward to, I don't mind admitting.
I wish it were less Diablo.
Does it have some Diablo tendencies?
It looks a little more Diablo than EQ.
Oh, man, I don't want to get
different. I'll still play it. I'll still be addicted.
We'll see where that goes. But with that said, I think we can adjourn. We encourage our listeners, as always, to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes if they are of the iTunes persuasion, and as well, rate us favorably and give us an awesome review. And if you are more into a streaming solution for consumption of our podcast, definitely also check us out on Stitcher.
Rivercaster, if you're out there, you can like us on Facebook and send us threatening messages. I'll totally cover the repair bill. Sorry, man. That's facebook.com/nerdstravaganza.
And if you would rather just check out our website, we also encourage you to do that at www.nerdstravaganza.com. And we would also welcome your direct feedback through our email address, which is nerdstravaganza@gmail.com. And with that, I think we can say...
Hawk! Justin! Hawkin!
Perfect.